Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, not even out to Phoenix, Arizona. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants. And that's guaranteed. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's market, where we've got a very competitive situation and with many of our listings, in other words, where there's more than one offer, you'll want to find out exactly not just what you can afford, but what a bank will commit to, and that's available only through Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700, and that is personalized, customized. Knock your socks off service and check out our low rate and closing cost guarantee. Certain restrictions do apply, but the details are on our website at huntmortgage.com. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. It's very simple. Dial 631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter who's listing it. As it could be any sign in front of any house. Just call 631-4800, and you'll be prompted with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically, just that fast. You'll get all the information in a matter of seconds. It's faster than going online and checking out Zillow or something like that. If you drive by a house you like, 631-4800, any listing, whether it's ours or any of the brokers. This is the spring market, which is traditionally the most active time in our real estate year. And there is a shortage of homes available in today's marketplace. And I encourage you, if you've thought about selling at any time, you want to know, first of all, what your home is worth, because you may be surprised. I was with two different groups yesterday in their homes, which is uncommon for me to do in one day. And in both cases, I think the owners were extremely pleasantly surprised by the movement in the market that's been fairly recent. And I encourage you to check that out. We have algorithms that will help our agents to precisely determine what your home is worth in light of your specific aspects of your particular property, and it's available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. And remember, when you call one of our agents, they'll be able to say this to you that nobody else can say to them, that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent, or by calling 633-9400 or stop by one of our many open houses. Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, Buffalo Sabres, and even the Rochester Americans. We're looking forward to better seasons ahead. If you'd like to participate in today's show, call us here in the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, or *930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls. We have a very special show for you today. We have in the studio with me Mr. Jeremy Jacobs, Jr., the co-CEO of Delaware North. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Peter.
Good to have you here. You know, Jerry, I get comments on this show from the weirdest places at the weirdest times, but the one show that we've done that has received more comments was the show we did, let me see exactly when we did it. We did it almost over a year ago. And still to this day, I even had a call yesterday, believe it or not. This is God's honest truth. When is Jerry Jacobs going to be on the show again? I swear to God. Anyway, it was my daughter. But
yeah, yeah. You got some angry callers waiting.
Anyway, Jerry, in our last show, we covered a lot of ground. And we began by you talking about the history of your company. You're an iconic organization here in Western New York. And one of the things we discussed, and I think it's an appropriate place to kind of begin, is really why you're here at all in Buffalo. Because, you know, we both have the opportunity to travel and we see high-growth marketplaces. And Buffalo, you know, is going through a new positive momentum change, and it has been going on for some time. And a lot of that has been, at least a good portion of that, has been fueled by, I think, people looking at your organization saying they're here for a reason. But not too many people know what that reason is.
Well, I mean, you can't deny the fact that, Grandpa started the company here and Dad grew up here, and by the time he was in a position to make a decision, he was well-rooted, and so too are my brothers and I. But, you know, we always like to say that Buffalo is not so much where we are as it is who we are. And what we mean by that is, you know, we love this community in terms of the virtues that are embraced here. Now, this is one of the few areas in the country where hard work is still really viewed as a virtue. And we always say that we're about as far east as you can come and still get Midwestern values. So it's a place that, you know, we call home for many reasons, and we like mostly because of the people in the region and the type of ethics that exist. You know, this is a place where family values are very, very strong. A lot of the people that we're able to attract back to our company, to our headquarters, you know, they're coming from New York, Chicago, L.A., Boston. And they're coming to Buffalo because usually they're sort of at a stage of life where they're raising young children, and they want to get a home they can afford, and they want to be able to put them into schools they can afford and have a lifestyle like they had when they grew up, where, you know, the family could be together and enjoy each other's time. So here, you know, in Buffalo, people, yeah, we work hard, but we also don't work 24/7. You know, we do respect our time off and really make sure that we take advantage of it. You know, unfortunately, on a day like today, I'm sure you got a lot of listeners because there's not much else to do. But, you know, typically Buffalo is a – we tell people this. We say, you know, yes, we're known for our winters, but we have the best summer in America. I mean, Buffalo is a great place for many, many reasons. And we try to say, look, hey, let's stop and take a step back here. We are one of the number one port of entry for our nation's largest trading partner, Canada. We sit on 20% of the world's fresh water supply is right out our back door. We don't have earthquakes or tornadoes or, you know, we don't, this is a very, I think we still sit on one of the busiest rail networks in the country. This is a place that is abundant with opportunity. We hit a soft patch, and you can see that we're just rebounding now. And it's not just Buffalo, it's the communities around Buffalo. You know, I live out in Elma, and we go into East Aurora a lot. East Aurora is just an incredible community right now. It's just restaurants popping up right and left. Great place to live, great place to be. I will say, and I was listening to your preamble, and you really struck a chord for me. We're attracting senior executives. We're growing, and we're adding senior executives to our system. And they're having a hard time finding the places they want, particularly in the city. It's very, very hard to find a place in the city right now. And I just don't remember it being like that. I had a place in the city, and you made me sell it too early. I could have made a fortune, but it's
I forced you.
So
actually,
I think, as I recall,
I tried to talk you into staying. That's all right.
But no, it's very, very true. There is a shortage of housing for professionals in the city right now.
And that's a very interesting point. And it's not just the city. It's yesterday I had a meeting with our leadership in this region, and we were talking about the lack of availability of housing, and there is the theory anyway that affects all aspects of housing except the high end. And now, for the first time, we're seeing multiple offers in what is the high end in this community, which is really over $500,000, and that's a shocker. Yeah. Because as I travel around the country, the high end is still hurting.
Yeah,
it's still hurting. But the bread and butter, whatever that price range is, all across the country, there's inventory is not there.
We have people that come in from, you know, other, like I can remember we brought somebody in from L.A., and Lou and I were sitting across the table from her, and we're saying, "Don't do it. Don't do it. You're going to want to buy yourself a Palazzi. You're going to have a ballroom." I mean, because they would come from L.A. and they'd have, you know, oodles and oodles of cash. And yep, what you could buy in Buffalo for that was amazing. And
well, it is tempting. And you know, we're working with a buyer right now that is buying one of those houses. And he just like you say, he's starstruck.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because he can't believe that you can buy a house like that for that kind of money, and it's true.
And they can, and they can live that lifestyle.
Yeah. And yet you go to other parts of the country, and they talk about a $3 million house like it's, you know, well, it's just a normal house. And it, you know, here that's that would be a top price.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Let's go back to
$3 million, huh? Man, you really did let me down.
I'm hurting you now.
No, I'm dying.
I know. Let's go back to Delaware North here for a second. You celebrated your 100th anniversary. Was it last year?
Yes. Yeah.
So how did that go? I mean, what did you do? How do you take an event like that and you know, internally kind of, and perhaps even externally, take advantage of a milestone like that? Because how many companies even survive 100 years?
Well, actually, you'd be surprised if you went around Buffalo. There are more companies than you realize that are approaching that marker.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all family businesses, and they've been around for a long, long time. But, you know, for us, the real difficulty, and it's a continuing story for Lou and I, is we're getting big. You know, we're getting really big. And it's hard to sort of stay true to what you were as you get bigger. You know, we're very customer-related. We're a customer-focusing organization. And how do we stay close to our customers? How do we stay close to our employees? And so along comes this 100-year anniversary. And we had to figure out how do we celebrate this in a way that we engage all of our associates. And I can't take credit for it. It came out of our leadership group that what we put together was a budget that allowed each individual operating center to come up with their own celebration. And then all we asked of them was send us a video of what you're doing. So we got some really innovative and funny videos of people celebrating the anniversary, you know, this 100-year anniversary. The biggest challenge in all that was, and this hadn't even dawned on us until we got in front of some brand consultants, and we were talking about how we weave this messaging into all that we do. And the woman looked across the table and she said, "You realize that when you say you're 100 years old, you kind of sound old and stodgy, right?" And it hadn't even dawned on us. So we had to put a lot of energy behind refocusing. Yes, we're 100 years old, but we're about what's next. You know, we're a forward-thinking organization. We're gonna, you know, we really are about what's coming, not what's past. But we do want to honor our legacy and celebrate, you know, the fact that we survived this long. And I'll tell you this: in that 100 years, we had two CEOs, you know, my grandpa and my dad. And so there's been a very stable leadership over that time. Of course, then everyone looks at Lou and I and says, "Now the wheels are going to fall off." But but it's been a good run. Yeah.
You know, we faced the same kind of dilemma 6-7 years ago when we turned 100, and not to talk about our story, but I thought about exactly what you're saying. How do you talk about this without sounding like an old piece of wood over in the corner someplace? So we started talking about it in terms of the first 100 years. And hopefully there will be more. And like your father, we have the next generation coming into our organization too, which I know how your father must feel. I feel the same way, knowing that you and Lou are there and that there is even another generation behind that. And how do you look at that in terms of you've got, as the family grows, there's more people to be considered?
Yeah, it's a dynamic that you know, there isn't a roadmap, because this isn't where we came from. You know, the company has had very consolidated ownership over the last 100 years, and as we look at the next 100, it's likely to have a much broader ownership as the families get bigger and they remain invested in the business. And so that takes a different type of governance. It takes a different type of leadership, and that's the real challenge in our whole evolution here, is learning how to do that, learning how to become a bigger company with a broader ownership, and you know, what are the governance models? What are the communication methods? What are the decision making processes that you have to go through, and still stay true to what we are, which is, you know, that customer centric organization, that customer-focused and relationship-focused organization. That's tricky, and it takes a lot of work. And I wish I had, you know, the roadmap and could say this is what we're going to do, but it's sort of a day-to-day thing.
Well, looking at it from the outside in, and I've looked at a couple companies this way as we try to model our own organization, but you have a multi-faceted organization. You're in various businesses. What businesses are you in now?
Well, everyone knows us, I think, in this community for sports service. And sports service is the sports concession business that sells those fashionably priced hot dogs, right? So But that
otherwise
that,
known as expensive.
No, fashionably. It's trendy. And that, believe it or not, is not the largest of our businesses. Our gaming business is our largest segment. It's close to half of our company today. It's been a very fast-growing element of our company. We are also in parks and resorts business. So we started with Yosemite National Park and have grown really into what we refer to as owned assets. So we started with contracts and parks, and now we're actually owning and operating resort properties in sort of unique and fun places. We're in the airport business. That's something my grandfather started, airport food and beverage. We're at Buffalo Airport. Again, those fashionably priced beverages. And, that and sports service are sort of our legacy companies. Gaming is our growth company. Parks is a growth company. And then we have this company that is Patina Restaurant Group, which we acquired 2 years ago. Used to be part of Restaurant Associates, and it was spun off with Nick Valenti, the president and owner of it, and with some Japanese investors sort of took it over and grew it. And that's added a whole new dimension to our business in terms of what we're capable of. We do a lot of work with Disney. We do a lot of work in L.A., Orlando, and New York in terms of street-side restaurants. And it's a whole new dimension for us. As you know, we have the Boston Garden, and that is a major consumer of cash for us right now. We are investing heavily in developing what was once the old garden site. There was basically a parking lot in front of the new garden that where the old garden had existed, and we're now putting a million square feet of development into that space.
That's a multi. Right. Faceted development. What are you going to have in condos?
We're going to have. We're actually not going to condo. We're actually thinking rental, mm-hmm. getting into renting the apartments out. So there'll be a housing complex. There'll be a hotel, office towers, and then there's. I think the largest star market in their system will be subterranean, attached to this, and of course we're doing a bunch of restaurants and different concepts there as well. So. That's a new one for us because we're used to investing in properties that generate cash pretty fast. This is one of those ones where you invest your cash and you wait and mm-hmm. you hope and mm-hmm. you wait.
I hope you're right because that's our world.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit about your company's thoughts about retail because you and this kind of goes back into the sports business a little bit, which I know you've done a lot of research in.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the financial press today and you look at the stocks of companies that own retail outlets that have haven't moved to the online world effectively or didn't start there like Amazon, they're getting pounded. And there's a series in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago, they listed the number of retail outlets were being closed by just 10 retailers, and it was a shocking number.
Right.
Many of which are even in our community here. How do you view something like what you're doing in Boston in light of the direction of retail?
Right.
And I would put the Boston Bruins into that category too as you look at the whole sports world.
Right. So the retail industry is in turmoil. I mean, bricks and mortar retail is in turmoil. And I don't know how they find their way out of this one. A Macy's, for example, they have flagship stores. They're really more tourist destinations than the actual stores. But the stores, the places that are engaged in the retail business, they're dying. They're dying on the vine. And what does that do to the real estate market in those major centers? And there's a trickle down to this. The Bruins and the train station, the Garden. It's unique in that we're sort of a hub of footfall traffic, not just for Bruins and Celtics games, which is going to give you, close to 100 events a nights a year where you're going to be busy. But you also have, a commuter rail right underneath the building. Mm-hmm. And it's the area there has seen an enormous development in condo development around the Garden. So we're pretty bullish on what that can do. But if we start talking about, doing a restaurant in a retail store, we hesitate. We're concerned about that. And there are many other layers to this to be concerned about because, our customers tend to be, the middle class, you know, which is a broad range. You know, that's mm-hmm. you know, just above poverty line to, you know, it's a big hunk of America.
And we define it very broadly in this country.
And very broadly, and but that they're our customer. And to the extent we start to see, you know, technology eliminating jobs, that's mm-hmm. a concern for us, because that's those are the people that we sell our fashionably priced products to, and those are our gamers too. Those are the people that come to our. We do regional casinos. We're not Las Vegas. You know, we're a very middle market company, and that's a concern for us.
You know, it's so fascinating to me to look at this part of the world, the retail world, and see what the next evolution could be. And as I look at it, I want your comments on this. We only got a minute before we have to go to break, but perhaps after the break. But one of the things that I look at is what happened during the recession that really pounded housing in this country, just pounded it into the ground. Mm-hmm. Markets were cut in half in terms of the total value of the real estate, residential real estate market cut in half. Phoenix, Sarasota, Las Vegas, just totally pounded. And I was thinking about who came in behind that. And what you saw was that there were thousands and thousands of small-time investors that came in and picked up these houses for a low cost. Well, that was erased when companies like Blackstone came in mm-hmm. and just bought up. They're the largest owner of single-family houses in the United States. Hmm. Now, what do they do? Sooner or later, they're going to say, this is, you know, we want to exit this. What do they go to? And I've got a little theory about that. I think that if I were them, and this is just me, I would look at these retail sites because, without exception, they're almost all extremely well located.
Oh, yeah. You know, they're on Main and Main. Yeah.
And just like you're describing in the garden, there's the reason why they were put there in the first place.
Right.
And there's infrastructure there that's not going to go away.
Right.
We got to go to break, but I want your comments about that and other aspects of Delaware North when we return with Jerry Jacobs after these important messages from our house to yours.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. And you'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, as well as our podcast for this particular show, by the way, and every other show we've done. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. And this show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. For more information about our many exclusive programs, call 633-3700 and ask for details about things like the Buy the Before and Live the After program, which allows you to effectively roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage so that you know exactly what you're going to be in for and you don't buy a money pit. That's the Buy the Before and Live the After. And also to ask about our pre-purchase commitment that allows you to effectively enter the market with cash or competing with those offers that might look like cash. Only at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And if you just have a general inquiry about anything relative to real estate, call our customer service center, the only one of its kind in North America, 633-9400. One of our customer service reps will instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever your particular needs are, whether you're considering buying or selling, financing, insuring, or even fixing up a home. Or we can perhaps even answer your question right there on the phone. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. I'm in the studio today with Jerry Jacobs, Jr., the co-CEO of Delaware North. Delaware North, is there?
Delaware North.
Okay. Stopped in my tracks there. Before the break, Jerry, I did a little monologue about the retail world, and you started to comment, and I cut you off and went on to more of a monologue. We talked a little bit on the break. Just give me your perspective on that, and because you're in very much in the retail world, and then try to weave that back into the sports world, because I know you and I have talked about how the sports fan is changing, and how that's going to maybe affect further effect. kind of the retail presence of sports in our economy.
Right. Well, we were talking about with these empty stores, what happens with that real estate when the bricks and mortar retail pulls back and leaves the buildings? What happens? And you know, obviously the one grand opportunity is housing. You know, there's a demand, a shortage, and there's these places are beautifully located. You know, but there are other things to consider, and this is where we're trying to focus a lot of our energies today at Delaware North is to figure out what's next. You know, what's coming. And interestingly, I just was in LA last week talking to Riot Games about esports and esports franchises. Now, esports is a controversial topic, and one front people say it's not a sport. Right? Well, let me describe it differently then. It's an unscripted drama where skilled players are advantaged and can win. So, you know, is it a sport? I don't really care. It's a form of competition where fans are coming to watch these events in droves. The world championship for one of the Riot Games' recent world championships had 44 million viewers.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's more, by the way, than the State of the Union address. So it's a pretty big market. And the question, the reason I bring it up is to say, you know, we have to be cognizant that things are shifting beyond sort of the normal parameters of what we would normally think would be the next thing to happen, even in these retail spaces. What's happening? Well, there's a big shift in preferences for the millennials. They don't buy and they don't live the way we do. And I was talking to some people, I forget, it was the other day, somebody, we were in a room and a bunch of us old guys, and there was somebody there who was 40 years old, and somebody referred to them as being young, and I said, excuse me, but he's not young anymore. I mean, young means, you know, things happen so fast now that if you're in your 40s, you're already kind of stuck in a parameter that you don't really understand what's happening or why, you know, millennials think the way they do. And recognizing that, starting with that, and then challenging all your assumptions going forward is really the key to sort of staying in front of what's happening. So these empty spaces, there's probably going to be some use for them that you and I haven't dreamt up yet. But it just seems that there's constant evolution of things that's happening. You know, obsolescence is almost immediate these days,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't bode well for a guy in his 50s, right? I mean, but it's the sort of thing to really pay attention to and really try to stay in front of if you can. And the key to that is just keep asking questions.
One of the things that I don't know how familiar you are with it, but one of the things that we're seeing more written about these days is the Bitcoin,
mm-hmm.
and how it's disintermediating brokers of everything.
Yep.
Because it's a whole new way of encrypted kind of dialogue between buyer and seller. Do you look at those kinds of things?
Absolutely.
What's your take on that?
Let me give you a picture for you. I'm in our business, and I'll take it down certain levels. So we did an experiment at Kennedy Space Center where we put in our food operation, we put in what we call a cashierless system. Basically, people come up, they order from a kiosk. They use a credit card, and they plug in their order, and then they go to the window and pick up their order. Now, we kept a cashier on the sides in the event that people were uncomfortable with that. I think like 2% of our transactions went through the cashier. Our biggest concern was we're about service. We're about interaction with the customer. We're about, you know, the human touch here and what's going to happen to customer satisfaction. So we paid very close attention to that. Customer satisfaction went up. And when we asked why, they said, well, we feel our order is more accurate. We can conduct our transaction faster, and we can get what we want immediately. The interesting piece in all that was we also found that our check averages went up 18%. So the payback on these machines was less than 6 months.
Wow.
And it was a real eye opener for us in terms of what the customer wants. And I'll tell you, a big piece in our business. We have 60,000 employees. And I always say this, I guarantee you, at this very minute, one of them, at least one of them, is doing something very stupid. So, when you think about it in
that's guaranteed.
Yes, yeah, more or less guaranteed. the beauty of these machines is they don't touch each other. So, you know, you have somebody that shows up on time, always adds on, always sells up. You know, it's a very attractive element to our business. But we're concerned about what it means for the customer. And we need people to have jobs,
right?
Because we need customers. So,
right.
You know, we're very there's a lot of dynamics to where this is, you know, where this is moving about. So I forgot what you were trying to ask me.
What I was asking about really is and you're discussing it. It's the erasing of the middleman at all levels in the economy.
Yeah. And you were talking about Bitcoin. Let me Bitcoin. You know, India is talking about eliminating currency and going to an electronic currency, a national electronic currency. A Bitcoin type of currency, which is just is amazing, right? But when you think about what happens, think about a baseball park. We have a money room. We have people that work till 2-3 in the morning counting out banks, counting out cash, moving cash back and forth through the system. We have shrink. There's theft. Whenever there's cash, you're going to have shrink. And then there's the time that the employees have to spend when they count in or count out their bank at the beginning or the end of the day. If we move to purely cashless electronic transactions, we can eliminate an enormous portion of our cost. Now, if we go to credit cards, we're going to have an increase in the cost of credit cards. We have a 3% fee on credit cards. If you go Bitcoin or blockchain, which is the facilitates mm-hmm. Bitcoin, and have some sort of transaction directly between me and you, in our accounts, we eliminate the credit card processing. Now we've mm-hmm. eliminated another 3%. So it begins to this is where it's going, and it's going to happen very fast. And I don't know if you've seen it, but Amazon has been working on a store, and this is the concept of frictionless, where you walk into the store, you walk past a reader, it recognizes you by your phone, you go up and get a banana and a yogurt and a soda, and you walk out, and you're automatically charged for what you've gotten. Now, they won't tell us how they're doing it, but we've seen them do it, and it's pretty amazing, and that's the future.
Mm-hmm.
But the scary part is, where are all the jobs?
Well, that's very interesting, and as I watch what's happening in the economy, a lot of people will say, not people I think that are pretty thinking people, it's in value-added manufacturing. It's looking at the product itself and improving the product. And that takes brains and it takes people. It takes skills. And this is why not only will how we interact from a mercantile standpoint change, but also what we're doing to be able to even engage in that is changing, and perhaps more radically.
Well, there's thinking about this world and being in front of where it's shifting. So in other areas, cybersecurity, negative unemployment. If you can find somebody that can, and look at what Google and the rest of the world are doing to attract coders. You know, you've got,
right.
You know, you're served three meals a day, your laundry's done, bring your dog, do whatever you want, please come here. They're desperate to attract. So,
Look at the medical field.
Yeah,
nurses.
Same
nurses,
thing.
The nurses are simply just aging out of the market, and there's not enough young people coming into the world.
Yeah.
Doctors, even.
You remember in the graduate plastics, young man, right? Today's it. Become a coder.
Yep.
You got to be a coder. That's the future.
Well, this is so interesting because as you look at an enterprise the size of yours and all the concerns that you've mentioned from, and one of the things that you imply is that if you don't need as many people, you potentially have fewer customers.
Yeah.
On the other end of this whole thing.
Yeah.
And looking at then how, and I want to come back to this issue of esports because I know your company's done a lot of research in that whole area because it's fascinating to me because where do these people go? Do they get together physically or do they go to somebody's apartment?
Okay, so these are not us, all right? Just remember that.
No, they're not us, but we're going to have to go to a break.
All right.
I want you to hold that thought.
I was pretty good at asteroids.
And we'll be right back with more. With Jerry Jacobs from Our House Sears after these important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, and it's all new every week, as well as the all-new Hunt Mortgage as well. We're all new there every week as well, and that's you can reach people at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700, and just go to HuntRealEstate.com anytime in any of the markets we serve, and you'll find more than there than you can find just about any place else. We're in the midst of a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Jerry Jacobs, Jr., the co-CEO of Delaware North. And I'm not sure how we got on this topic, but we're into far-reaching topics, really, here. A far-reaching topic, I should say, that really affects what we do drastically, and certainly what you do. But the fact of life is that the economy, and you've pointed this out a couple times, that the first of all, you mentioned obsolescence is almost immediate, and the pace at which this change is happening is faster and faster and faster. But as we look down the road, we're talking about the concept of esports, and first of all, obviously, from your perspective, you want to know how it's going to affect people that are going to come and watch the Bruins or the Bills or any of the other stadiums where you have people coming to spend money. But I ask the silly question: where do these people go when they participate in these things?
Yeah, they're coming out of their parents' basement. I mean, literally, they're living at home. We were talking with Riot Games: when do you schedule something, an event like this? Because we're going to do one at the Garden. And how do you, how do you figure out what the best time to schedule an event of this nature? We don't want to, when the NCAAs are on, or you don't want to compete with the Super Bowl, And they just shook their head and said, "You don't understand. These people don't watch the Super Bowl. They don't care about NCAAs. So this is a whole nother market." And the interesting thing, and this is, I think, speaks to also what professional sports are aware of and are trying to figure out and are getting closer to coming to certain conclusions. Fan engagement is the key. So what technology has offered is opportunities for new levels of fan engagement. What happens with esports is the fans watch their heroes practice. They text them. They communicate with them. It's almost a seamless sort of world, and it doesn't matter where you are or what time it is. They're in touch with these I'll call them players or athletes. So in professional sports, what's the answer? How does that work? Fantasy football has been a savior for the NFL. It's been an incredible way for fans to engage at a whole new level. And now they're not watching teams, they're watching players. And they're watching all the games. And they're very, very engaged in what's happening with the sport. How does hockey and the NBA and, how does MLB engage at that level? I can tell you one of the things that's being kicked around out there, and this almost is like, sounds like blasphemy, but is sports book is betting. If you go to the UK and you watch a football match, a soccer match, and there was a time there were Ladbroke booths all around the stadium, and you could bet on who would score the first goal, who's going to get the first penalty, you could bet all sorts of combinations. So the last time I was there, I looked around and I said, what happened to all the booths? And they said, they don't do that anymore. Everyone just uses their phone. So you're looking around this bowl of like 90,000 people, and they're all betting on who's going to get the next penalty, who's going to get the next goal, what's happening. And they are engaged at a level that is beyond just the pure spectator sport. The truth of the matter is that at some level is happening anyways. Just the question is, do you want to regulate it, and shouldn't the leagues get a piece of it? But this is, I think, one way that they're going to see a higher level of fan engagement in the future.
It amazes me that sports like soccer or what other Europeans call football attract the crowds they do, the physical crowds. But like you say, there's so much more going on than meets the eye.
Oh, tons.
It's just amazing to me. It's not a cult kind of thing. It's a life.
Oh, I'll tell you this. We were talking the other day about a new facility. I can't go into it, but a new building that's going up. And we said, look, in order to provide Wi-Fi for every patron that comes through the door, you're going to have to spend millions. I mean, it's going to be $2-4 million. And he said, we can guarantee you one thing. If you put it in, they won't notice it. But if you don't have it, they will notice. Absolutely. The point is, there's a new threshold. There's a new baseline that you have to provide. And, the iPhone was introduced in 2006.
No.
2006.
Actually, it went retail in 2007. They just had their anniversary.
Yeah.
The 10-year anniversary.
It's changed our world. It's changed the way we buy. It's changed the way we live.
And there was no demand for that. No one said, would you please invent this kind of thing? It just happened.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs just introduced it, and all of a sudden our world's changed.
Yeah. Well, he was a visionary, that's for sure. But so, you know, it's a dynamic that, you know, has offered this level of fan engagement now, though, that is beyond anything that we ever conceived of. And where does it go? What's next? You know?
Well, that's a very good point. You know, the mission of this show is to help our listeners protect and enhance their investment in real estate. And I think we
might have drifted a little
bit. Well, no, I don't think we have. I hope what we've done today, and we've got some time here left, is to open people's eyes on how maybe the next real estate transaction will be conducted.
Oh, yeah.
And this is something we're, like, you're exploring how you engage fans. We're exploring how we engage customers in the process of buying and selling real estate. And it's changing. And I think it's going to be warp speed when it happens. I'm not sure what it's going to look like yet, but we've got some ideas, just like you do.
Well, and we become so numb to change. It just happens, and we accept it. What is likely to happen is you'll turn around one day and say, oh, my God, did you see how much things just changed? I didn't realize it. And that's sort of what...
Well, yeah, and if you're looking at what drives values in marketplaces today, a lot of that has to do with the speed at which a transaction can be conducted. We have a caller on the line, Jerry. This is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Yeah, I was just curious, thank you, if Mr. Jacobs thinks there's any potential for population growth in upstate New York, given the state politics.
Interesting.
Well, it's definitely a hurdle. And to make matters worse, you know, with the Trump tax plan eliminating the deductibility of what are some of the highest state taxes in the nation isn't going to help. But on the other side, I think where the population goes is where opportunity resides. And I think that this region is sitting on some very valuable assets that have yet to really be reached their premium. Just water, you know, just fresh water being one of those items that you know, the rest of the world is beginning to focus on. T. Boone Pickens was investing in water. You know, he was an oil guy. He's now investing in water because it's becoming a serious problem. Now, we've seen the end of the drought in California with this record snowfall. You know, that's going to probably wash out half of California when it's done. But fresh water is, at one point, I remember Atlanta was trying to tap into the Great Lakes because they were running out of water.
Mm-hmm.
We're Buffalo. If you really think about Buffalo, first of all, we're one of the winners in the global warming game. You know, because our region becomes a much more comfortable place, and the need for fresh water and the need for space and land. You know, Western New York, we're kind of a cheap option. You know, we're ideally located. We're between Toronto and New York. We're in a good spot, and we've got good people. I mean, that's the real fundamental. Where do you want to live? You know, where are the millennials going? They're coming to Buffalo all of a sudden. All of a sudden, we're cool, which is kind of weird to me because I've never been cool in my life. But you know,
at least not except in your own mind.
Yeah.
But you know, the issue of coolness is something that we've talked about on this show is often with my guests because I think that that's a real factor. And there was an article, well, not 12 years ago, that was on front page of USA Today, which I've referenced a couple times on this show, that was talking about the city of Cincinnati, which had, you know, not terribly dissimilar history to ours. And they had achieved, at least in their own minds, and certainly the minds of the young people moving back to town at that time, a coolness. And so they started digging deep. What was the foundation of that? And I know you're involved in a lot of this here, and even your wife Alice is very involved. To a large extent, it's the vibrancy of the arts community, and as well as you know, obviously the kind of the technical world as well. But the arts community tends to bind young people together. And if a place is viewed as cool along those lines or on the leading edge of it, it's extremely attractive. And I think that's one of those assets that's maybe starting to come to the surface here in Western New York. We have an incredible arts community here.
Yeah, we do. I mean, what's going to happen with the Albright is amazing. How quickly that money was assembled still blows my mind.
The fastest of any project of its kind in history in this country.
It's amazing. Don't forget, you touched on science, the medical community, and how fast that is coming on so strong. And I didn't know this, but I have a father-in-law who's big into architecture. Western New York is sort of a mecca for architecture buffs because we have this unique Western or Midwestern architecture that has in many ways been untouched. It's one of the advantages of being poor for 90 years. We haven't really ripped down these beautiful old buildings, and they've been preserved. And so we also have that. I mean, it's a destination city. It's becoming more and more so. And, of course, then there's that Niagara Falls down the way. But the summer months in Buffalo, if you're in the hotel business, summer months were sold out. We have a lot of things to attract people to. And now the river, and it's just becoming more and more attractive.
And I think, you touched on this earlier, too, and this is about, our mission on this show. It's still, in a relative sense, we are the world's bargain when it comes to real estate.
Absolutely.
And we did a little analysis, kind of a back-of-the-envelope analysis of rents in downtown Buffalo for office space, and I know you're acutely sensitive to this. And what we found was that since the 80s, they haven't moved a real lot.
No.
And that's shocking. Yeah. And if you look even at New York, rents that were, we thought, astoundingly high at $40 a foot in the 80s are now $140 a foot. And here we are, and you and I have talked about this in terms of where does the government place its assets, its human resources.
Oh, yeah, you know my view on that.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they look at upstate, to Gustav's point?
Oh, I mean, you think about the federal government. If you go to Washington, D.C., it is so crowded. There's 100% unemployment. It doesn't matter what the economy is doing. And they're paying rates that are through the roof to get office space. Why we don't take some of the buildings that are vacant here in Buffalo and move departments of the federal government into that space? It's crazy.
Now we got a real estate guy in the White House. Do you think he's not sensitive to this? I think he is.
Is he a real estate guy?
Sort of. Yeah. Maybe a promoter. I don't know. I'm not sure what he is. But the fact of life is this, that if they're looking at how they accomplish some quid pro quo with this pounding that New York State's going to take if you
right.
take away the deductibility of state tax, why not say, okay, what we're going to do is move four agencies to New York State?
Yes.
Because to me, that brings people back.
It'd be good business.
It'd be great business.
You're going to be able to house these offices for significantly less than you're paying in D.C.
Well, there you go, Jerry. We've solved at least one major problem here, and it's just in time for us to sign off. So I'd like to thank you, Jerry Jacobs, Jr., CEO, co-CEO of Delaware North, for joining me this morning.
That's been a pleasure. I still want to meet Bob Vila, though.
Well, he'll show up sometime here today. But I know you're a busy man, and you'll have to leave. But I'd like to thank our listeners, and I want to thank my co-hosts that have stood in for me of late as I've been traveling all around. But we will be back next week at the same time. So remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York is hunt country.